And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton at 93.3 on the FM dial, and the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. And we're pleased to have with us Dave McAray. He is a regular contributor to Counterpunch, Huffington Post, a variety of online publications, conducts radio interviews, and he is also a playwright and a poet, as we'll see. I would say he's someone who's especially focused on the decline in the condition of ordinary working people in the United States. So, Dave, thanks so much for being on the program with us today.
My pleasure.
Well, there's been a lot of interesting articles in Counterpunch, and we have this recent one entitled, Is There No Limit to the Insults Being Heaped Upon America's Teachers? Now, I sent that one around. It got a positive response. I think people in Canada are often feeling the same way about the teaching situation. Now, there's a number of initiatives in the United States supposedly designed to improve the education system, and I think you touched upon one of the more comical ones recently. It was a cash incentive. Can you tell us about this motivation drive that has been directed towards teachers?
Well, that was the one I was speaking of, was at Vanderbilt University, and they thought, you hear a lot of people saying, you know, to attract stronger teachers, better teachers, we should give them more money. Thinking anything else, CEOs, you give them more money, they do better, et cetera. They had various experiments where they offered $5,000, $10,000, and $15,000 bonuses that they would teach in such a way that would improve the test scores. And what they found was that these teachers were already teaching the best they could. They go to class. They want to teach the heck out of these students. They do the best they can. And the idea, what made it rather ludicrous was what? You have a teacher, you think of yourself as a teacher and say, okay, hey, wait, what, $5,000? Okay, could everybody get around. I'm going to really start teaching you kids. It was silly, but the teachers want to teach. They have a curriculum, by the way, where you have to teach according to it. It's not a matter of, hey, what am I going to teach today? State standards are very, very rigorous. In fact, fifth graders now in California, you know, have to learn the periodic table. I know two teachers who teach fifth grade, and I said, I swear that I was a sophomore in high school when I learned the periodic tables. And yet everybody's saying our education system is horrible. But anyway, yeah, I thought it was very telling, the Vanderbilt thing was, if we just throw more money, all of these lazy teachers, these incompetent teachers, will rise.
Right. I guess the implication was they're just kind of sitting around there, just lounging around, and then suddenly if you throw $5,000 at them, they'll say, oh, $5,000. Well, I'll start teaching for real now. You know,
right.
Some assumptions about the motivation of teachers. But you see, there's a lot of picking on teachers when things go wrong in the education system. Certainly there's a lot of problems right now, but to a large degree, they extend beyond the classroom. I mean, you're dealing with families. I think there's a lot of difficulty just getting kids there on time and motivated, isn't there?
That's a huge issue, and that's one also because it is family-based, societal. It's something that the politicians are going to stay away from. First of all, it's very hard to fix. A lot easier to go ahead and have test scores. But I thought over the years that the whole thing against teachers is three-pronged, really. One of them, of course, is the anti-union movement. They know that, for example, in 2008, unions gave about $400 million to Obama. They're always with Democrats, almost historically. So they would love to break up the union, and that's a very important thing for them. If they can break the union, they can break down organized labor, and they can get less money for the Democrats. Number two is a drive to see if they can privatize schools. There's 49.8 million students in the U.S. who go to private schools from K to 12, and about 5.3 privates. They would love to go ahead and get all these people to pay for an education that are free. And I think the third side is just a resentment and envy, the way things have gone in the last maybe 8-10 years or even further. So many bad things in the public sector now. People aren't getting raises. They're losing their pensions. They're having to pay way more for health care. And they take a look around at the policemen, firemen, and school teachers and see these guys still have very good wages, very good pensions, you know, so to speak. Their insurance coverage is good. It's solid. They're secure in their jobs. And there's a huge amount of resentment. You add to that the fact that all of these perks are being paid for by the taxpayer. You can see the source of that.
No, there's a lot of issues here. I guess 50K is the new 80K in terms of income. Maybe 30K is the new 50K. You know?
That's a good one.
No, but it's true. You see, what we're dealing with is the decimation of the U.S. family and the Canadian family. I mean, people are trying to adhere to a certain ideal, a nuclear ideal, and as jobs go away, as good-paying jobs decrease, it's hard to keep a roof over the heads of your children. So you have these multi-generation families. You're living with your parents or your grandparents, your in-laws. There's a lot of truancy, crime rates, drug abuse. You got to get the kids to school, and they got to be acting as if they're not in the middle of the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression.
That's true. There was a superintendent of schools in Los Angeles named Brewer, David Brewer. I think it was two superintendents ago. Brewer was an African-American. He was a retired former naval admiral. And he became superintendent of the schools. He was known, he would bring some discipline and so on. But he said something that kind of alienated some people. I think what he said was true, though. But he said, you find your, as a general rule, you find your good neighborhoods have good schools, and as a general rule, the bad neighborhoods have bad schools. Well, and he said that's true across the board. And no one could dispute him, but there was a fatalism to what he said that really kind of bothered people. Also, people don't realize, the ones I've talked to are surprised when I tell them that all the public schools have to teach the very same thing at the same time. The schools in Irvine and San Marino and some of the upscale Southern California areas, they teach the very same things as they do to South Central Los Angeles. A lot of people just thought it was up to the teachers to go ahead and slow it down, say, okay, this stuff is too advanced for you, let's go ahead and cut back. That is not the case. They're not allowed to.
Yeah. No, America is supposed to be the land of opportunity, and I've heard there's actually less mobility up and down than in European countries. So everyone knows there's certain neighborhoods where there's schools where a majority of people go to university or even private school, prep school, and certain specialty universities. And there's other neighborhoods where people just go right into the workforce. And a lot of it, if you have defunding of the education system, there's more riding on the shoulders of teachers. So they're expected to buy school supplies. And in certain neighborhoods, if you're depending on parents and teachers, some schools are going to be more well-provisioned than others.
Without a doubt, without a doubt. Also, it goes further. It's the idea of school teachers say, if you as a parent, if you can go ahead and pay attention to what your child is doing, if you can spend 30 minutes a night even looking at the homework, making sure, see what the books are, see what the kid is doing in class, be open to any questions, show your child that you care, that you have an interest. Also, supply him or her with a safe place, a secure place, a well-lighted room to do their homework in. Not much to ask, but it is a lot to ask in certain neighborhoods that are wildly unstable. It's been mentioned, I knew a guy who taught fifth grade in the inner city in Los Angeles, and it was his first job as a school teacher. I won't mention the school. But he found out from the principal that nearly 40% of the students there were in foster care. And he was stunned to find how many of his students were being raised by grandparents. You know, it was drug addiction, it was crime, it was terrible. It's just shocking to him. And that's one of those insoluble things. If I might mention, you mentioned private schools, that's another oddball kind of myth here, is they point out that private schools have a better record of success than the, you know, public schools. And here is a paradox there. In the state of California, to be a school teacher at public schools, you have to have a college degree and a credential. You have to have both. State law will not let you. To be a private school teacher, you need neither. You certainly don't have to have a credential, and they don't require that you have a college degree. You can have a year or two at junior college. You can have high school, and they'll hire you. And the third thing is that the salaries in the private schools are significantly lower than they are in the public schools. So here you have a person that earns more and less certification, but their results are better. So it's one of those, what's wrong with this picture? And I would say that it speaks to the family life. You have parents who are willing to pay for something they can get free, seems to indicate the emphasis they would place on education.
Yeah, you mentioned the word privatization. That seems to be a major trend here. They've managed to privatize everything in America. They've privatized the space program. They've privatized, as you pointed out, bottled water, the water supply itself. So what's left? I mean, there's education. There's something you can make money off because you got to monetize everything. So,
everything.
You know, someone going into school and under the public system means that some private business somewhere isn't making enough money. So
that's true. It's true. You know, the thing about it that makes a lot of us angry, you know, everybody over 50 has a good memory of it, is this used to be a real source of pride for the United States, okay, the public school system. It was around since the 1800s. The idea of everybody, you know, having the opportunity to be educated free of charge, it was just a great thing. And I think it first began to have some cracks in the facade. A very famous kind of study was, we found that from 1963 to 1987, the scores on the SAT test dropped 87 points. Now, the SAT isn't what they do in schools, where they give everybody the test, elementary schools here. The SAT is for students who say they plan to go to college. So it's voluntary, and it's kind of a select group. And that alarmed people. They say, what's going on? That is almost a 100-point drop. And that is a big drop. And that was the rise of the charter school movement, where they take actual public funds and set aside and have a school that has a charter to do things differently. They're largely set up in African-American neighborhoods. But that's another movement that is being sponsored by Republican people, not to make money off it because you can't charge a fee to go to charter school, but you have non-union teachers. So the move is to get as many charter schools set up where they don't have those union teachers. They can pay them less. And you can imagine it led to exactly the kind of scandals that you would predict. A week ago, they found out that they were giving the results of tests. I mean, they were showing the tests to the children in advance. They were telling teachers, look at the tests. Don't tell anybody you saw the answers and pass it along, because our charter is one that we say we will have much better success in public schools. For us to do that, how they calculate that is test scores. So hence, we have to have high test scores. Well, they finally had a couple of whistleblowers. They're scared to death because without a union to back you, you don't have any whistleblowers. You have no protection. They will fire you outright. And yeah, you can go to court and sue them, but that'll take years. With a union, at least you're not afraid to come forth. But so some of these scandals, they have one in Pennsylvania, they have one in Illinois, and this recent one in California, where you can imagine it's all on test scores, everything is test, then you can imagine some people are going to be fudging on those.
Breaking the union seems to be a major objective here. I mean, if you want to privatize schools, make money off them, you got to break the existing unions. In the case of the teachers, I mean, they're under hysterical attack, as you pointed out. So it seems that there's an attempt to create a crisis and just drive people out or drive people crazy.
Yep. That is, you know, it's a little bit broader here, but just to mention it, a lot of people say that the U.S. works off of fear, that the powers that be try to keep us whipped up into a state of fear. You know, Gore Vidal, who recently died, had said that we actually fought World War III. It was the entire Cold War. World War II was, you know, barely over, and we had a new enemy. It was the Soviet Union. We kept the same amount of arms. We increased every year, actually, made arms, expanded bases, and we went on and on and on. Once the Soviet Union broke up in 91, guess what? We had, you know, the whole thing of the jihad, fear. Nobody knows the exact answer because it's secret, but the estimate is between 800 and 1,000 military bases around the world. We know that the U.S. spends more on defense than the next 22 countries combined. How do we do that? Fear. And I think what they're doing is the hysteria, the wild accusations, not only school teachers but any of the public sector people, is really a high-intensity level of fear to get people to hate them. You don't think you'd see it in firemen, but you do. These people are seen. And, of course, they're going to cherry-pick and use the absolute worst exceptions about how much they make in their pensions and so on, and, you know, the double-dipping and so on. But those are actually fairly modest pensions. They said in California the average public sector retirement is about $2,500 a month. Which is, what, about $30,000 a year in retirement. You can live on that, especially if you have your house paid off, but you're not going to get rich off that.
No, of course. It shows how much the times have changed. I mean, people did not become teachers in order to get rich.
Right.
But I guess if wages have declined, if there are no steady jobs, if people are working two or three miserable jobs, someone with a steady, even if somewhat low-paying job, like a teacher, might seem much more wealthy by comparison.
Yeah. exactly. That's exactly what's happening. There's been a shift in expectations. The public sector is now hanging in, and, the private sector is in free fall in many areas. Plus, you have nothing. You don't have a union. You have no one there to, protect you and so on. One of the things that alarms me is when I get emails from people that sound smart, they sound educated, and they will say there was a time when unions were important. Unions were important for this country, but they're no longer needed. And I will write them and say, why were they needed then? They were needed to stand up against management. Okay. But you don't think it's needed now? No. So somehow the United States has fallen for the argument that things are okay now for working people. And that is alarming.
Well, I mean, we've all seen the graphs that are circulating on the internet, but productivity has gone up. It's gone up since 1973. It's doubled or tripled, but the average wage adjusted is the same. So people are producing more in every sector, service, factories, productive industries. They've been paid the same. And in the city I live in, I've been told that the median male wage has gone down by $10,000 over the last 10 years. So there's been this scaling back, this rollback of wages, a lot of the protections. I think you've pointed out that something like the Occupational Health and Safety Act, which is very toothless, would never be passed today. It would not be passed because it would be considered too radical. So, you can't even hold on to what you have.
That is a very good point you mentioned about OSHA. It was passed in 1970 under Nixon, and he passed also the Clean Water Act and the Clean Air Act. The EPA was strengthened. They had food stamps were expanded. These things, not only was that a Republican doing it, but we've moved so far to the right that nobody could get those passed as a Democrat today with the Congress, as you know. That would never pass. The idea that you would have the federal government would be able to come into a business and be able to shut it down for safety reasons. But, even in the old days, I used to work with OSHA a bit. Even then, they were very intimidated by, management. They fought hard to get the law where they could walk into a place unannounced. Management wanted to say, no, we need 24 hours advance notice. You can imagine what they would do in that 24-hour period. But I thought OSHA, the guy sat with me and said, please tell your people not to call OSHA unless they really have a good reason, because he said they only had six field agents. What he told me, six field agents from San Diego to Santa Barbara, and that is about 200 miles.
No, it's a similar situation in Ontario, but I think you've pointed out, too, the violations. If someone violates Health and Safety Acts, their management, I mean, what are they charged?
Oh, shockingly low. I will give you an actual case. There was a machine that had a spoked drive wheel. It was on the bottom, maybe 8 inches above the ground. This is when the machine stopped and plugged up. You would be able to turn that by hand to break up the, plug up. And this thing spins as the machine's running. It's spinning really fast. They're supposed to be solid wheels. The idea, spoked, you can see the danger putting your foot in there accidentally. So there was a spoked wheel where there should have been a solid one. That was an OSHA violation. This was 1980, and they charged the company $75. Fair enough. There was a guy who had a foot amputated. It was ripped apart in a machine. Maybe who can say whose fault, but they were fined $5,000. Okay? The limit, I believe, there's a limit to how much OSHA will pay for a death, for a fatality, and I think it's in the 70s or 80s, $80,000. In other words, it is a very, very fangless institution. I'm glad we have it, but they're trying to defund it every year. They have to fight for their lives to get funding. But the weird thing is I'm surprised that people are on the other side on this, that they actually take management point of view and think, hey, what are these guys, why are they nosing in the company business? That's what amazes me, is back with the people saying unions used to be needed, but not anymore. Why not anymore? As you said, 1973 marks the time when people actually got real wage increases. June of 79 is an important month and year. It was the number of people, the highest number of people that worked in American factories occurred in June of 1979. And since then, it's been a slow decline to where we are today. And yet, I'm shocked that people side more with management and the rich.
Well, there's 5,000 or so factory deaths in the United States per year. Americans receive fewer fewer holidays than workers in Germany. In fact, I've heard Americans work more hours than workers in Japan. We had all heard about the Japanese work ethic and suicide or death by work, but that was
right.
And now Americans are outdoing that. And for what? For stagnant wages or wages that have decreased while the prices of everything has gone up. Housing has gone up. Education has gone up. Food has gone up. Credit card debt is out just beyond any imagination in both Canada and in the United States. And they're saying, well, you don't need a union. You know, there used to be a saying that the worker hates the man in the house on the hill.
Right, right.
And now you want to be the man in the house on the hill. You know?
Right, right. You want to lower the tax rate on the man with the house on the hill.
Because you might become him someday.
And I think you're right. I think that must be the dream. The other thing when I hear people say, I say, hey, you know, we work harder than Germany and so on. People say, yeah, because hard work's good. But I said, if you really applauded hard work, if you thought that hard work was a virtue, yeah, I've never seen anybody do harder work than the stoop laborers, the Mexicans who pick our fruit and vegetables. That is hard work, and yet they're despised here.
Well, it's not only that. Think about the cleaning staff and hotel workers in New York City, for example. I had heard some bankers, some financiers say, hey, why are they calling for a wage increase? You know, aren't they making enough at $16 or $20 an hour or whatever it was? And I'm thinking, you know what? Those people actually work. They work for 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day cleaning your hotel suites that you use and abuse and trash. And if you had to work for 5 minutes in their job, you'd be crying. You'd be crying.
But, absolutely.
And here they are, you know, and when it's about work that people understand, then it becomes easy to criticize. So when someone is a hotel cleaner, you think, oh, wow, they should be making such and such amount of money. When it's something close to home, teaching, everyone has been through school. They've all had teachers, good teachers and bad teachers, and everyone thinks they have a right to comment on it. Most people have not been on the stockroom floor, the New York City Stock Exchange.
Right.
So they don't criticize too much of what goes on there. But when it comes to your neighbor and an ordinary job, then people start really throwing out the accusations.
The other thing about the school teachers, just one more point, is that the understanding is that it's such a powerful union that they don't allow the administration to fire the bad teachers. Okay, so that point has been used. Hey, we'd be fine. We'd have really good teachers if that darn union weren't there to stop them from firing them. Okay, if you look at the United States, you'll find, and this is a shocker, that union and non-union teachers get fired at about the exact same rate. Why? Because there's no reason to fire teachers. Teachers are pretty darn good. And if you look at the figures, I wrote a piece a few years ago. North Carolina, I use as an example because it was basically the same as California. North Carolina has the lowest number of union workers in anything at all. I think they average about 3.5% of their workforce is unionized. The state with the most is New York, and I think New York is right around 20%. And we in California are in the high teens. But anyway, North Carolina, they fire, without any unions, they fire about the same amount of school teachers as we do in California. Also, don't forget, in California, you're on 2 years probation. They watch you for 2 years, and they can fire you for any reason or no reason for anything without the union having any sort of intervention because they don't have the right yet. That's a 2-year probationary period. I think that's fair. I wouldn't mind seeing it going to 3 years if they would utilize it.
No, there's definitely a structure in place within unionized workplaces. When you look at the greater changes in society right now, you've pointed out everything in the world is in a race to the bottom. You know, Americans buy their clothing from the poorest sweatshops while spending all the country's money on a huge network of bases. What did you say, 800 or 1,000? So, I mean, how do you maintain this? If you have people going through an education system, a credentialed system in which there's definite requirements and expectations, you can have people that are capable of understanding and perhaps critiquing that system. So why not shut the whole thing down? And I guess the teachers' unions are taking actions on this basis.
That's true. The school teachers' union in Los Angeles, the UTLA, I believe they have now 32,000 teachers. I think they had 42,000 not that long ago. There have been a lack of students, loss of students, which has cut back the school teachers as well. Layoffs have occurred. But anyway, that is a pretty powerful union in the sense that they try to maintain a standard. I don't know the exact figure, but if I'm about 95% sure of this, is that if you have all of the education required, that you go back and take classes and, you know, further classes, and you've reached the point in your seniority, I think you can make $71,000, $72,000 as a school teacher in an elementary school, which is a livable wage, you know. It's in the 40s. To start, I think, for some of these, you can make 71. But this is the other thing, is that they've maintained a pretty good medical plan, which seems fair. It seems fair. And instead of people saying we should be like them, hey, that's good. That's what we should do. We should fight for that. The exact opposite has happened. You have people resent them by thinking, hey, we don't have it. Why should you have it? It's a shocker. It really makes me wonder where we are. That kind of resentment, I don't know. That is a part of this thing, I think, that probably most surprises me. Remember the days back when people envied unions and wanted to get into one? Hey, are they hiring there? A union job was considered a really good job. Besides the fact you were fairly stable, they couldn't fire you because they wanted to hire the boss's nephew for your job. Could never happen in the union, ever, ever. Some years ago, Walmart, you saw in the paper, Walmart had to pay $640 million in back wages. Why? Apparently they were making people come in, change uniforms, and do some jobs of some kind, not being on the clock. And, you know, they got thousands of stores nationwide. And they filed, it was like 75 different class action suits, and they won. And they had to pay all these people about $640 million. The point I made in an article is, say what you will about unions, but that never, ever would have happened in a union shop. No. You would never not get the pay you're entitled to.
And Walmart sets the pace for the rest of industry. When you have the expansion of service in Canada and the U.S. and other places, I mean, they're the pace setters that that begin to affect wages and working conditions in other similar businesses, other retail outlets, grocery stores, and so on. So it's very important what they do. And I think you've pointed out it comes down ultimately to the question, how do you create a middle class? You know, everyone in the United States wants to say they're middle class, but can you do that on corporate leftovers, on what remains? The situation that we have where we have some regulations was created by unions, but it's been under attack since at least the 80s, if not the 70s.
That's right. That's very true. And also, when you ask Americans, you know, they're always proud of the middle class. Okay. When you ask Americans, how long have we had a middle class? For some reason, Americans seem to think not really thinking about it, think that we've had it for like 100 years. And you point out, well, we didn't have it before World War II, okay? I mean, we had a depression in the 30s and the roaring 20s. Come on. This is relatively new. When you look at what dates people assign to it, you know, the ones that are typical are early 50s to late 70s, where it began to, as you mentioned, 1973, a very important year, it began to be eroded. So basically, it's about 25 years that we had a real roaring middle class. Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor under Clinton, has pointed out the problem with the very rich saying that things will trickle down. They don't buy enough. Yes, they're rich, but they don't buy. They'll buy a yacht. They'll buy a mansion. Okay, now what? But the middle class was the engine that absolutely drove this economy. And that's being wiped out, and that's one reason no one's buying anything.
You know, you do need to have money in your pocket to buy something. It's true. I think ultimately a lot of the people that you seem to be encountering probably bought into the propaganda that everyone's either a winner or a loser in this economy. And no one wants to admit to being losers, so they don't want to band together. It's
very good point, Brendan. They don't not only want to be branded losers, the working class doesn't want to be branded as working class.
I think that's a very important point. As we saw Joe Biden make a long plea for the middle class just last week, maybe we should start asking ourselves, what is middle class? What's this working class? And who's really there? There's a lot of precarious work, a lot of people living paycheck to paycheck, quite literally. And we might want to reevaluate what America is right now.
That's very true.
This is a lot to think about, and the teachers' unions, there's actions occurring in the United States now, actions that are going to be coming up in Canada. So we want to look at one of the last places where there is unionization in the United States and a public system, because, again, this will be pace-setting for the rest of the country. So I thank you very much for keeping track of that. Hope to see more articles about America's teachers. I know your writing on Counterpunch and others have covered the subject fairly well. It's a big issue right now, so thanks for helping bring it to our attention.
Thank you very much.